Drive. Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. The orders of the court are posted in the clerk's office and outside and available for your inspection. This morning, the court has two causes which will be submitted orally. In the order in which they are presented, they are N.A. Bryant individually and doing business as Bryant Oil Company versus Texas American Bank Level Land from Hockley County, and Lear Siegler Incorporated and others versus Herlinda Perez individually and as administratrix of the estate of Rafael Pablo Perez, deceased, Marlo Perez, and Roberto Perez from Hidalgo County. In the first cause, we have allotted 15 minutes for each side to present oral argument. In the second cause, 20 minutes. These arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court, and you may make application with our clerk to listen to the tapes of the arguments if you so desire. The court is notes with pleasure that students from Millsap High School in Parker County are here to observe our proceedings. We are now ready to hear argument from petitioner in Bryant versus Texas American Bank Level Land.
May I please the court? Donald M. Hunt will present argument for petitioner and interviewer 3 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. This is a post-foreclosure deficiency case in which I represent petitioner Bryant, who raised a late notice defense to the deficiency judgment. The district court rejected that defense, imposed the deficiency judgment, and the Court of Appeals affirmed. This defense raises a single question on appeal. Does the foreclosure statute, which requires notice of sale at least 21 days before sale, prohibit the counting of the day of notice as one of the 21 days? Or to state it slightly differently, in counting the 21 days of the foreclosure statute, must the day of sale and the day of giving notice both be excluded? If the answer to this question is yes, then the deficiency judgment was improperly granted and should be reversed and rendered. If the answer is no, and 20 days in part of another is sufficient, then the judgment should be affirmed. The correct answer to this question is introduced by a quick look at the undisputed facts. Bryant executed two notes secured by deeds of trust. When he was unable to continue paying, Texas American Bank gave notice on November 10, 1987, of a foreclosure to follow on December 1. There are 20 days between November 10 and December 1.
You don't count the first day.
Correct. Since notice was given late in the afternoon, then the maximum notice given was 20 days plus a few hours. So these facts raise the question of whether 20 days and a few hours failed to meet the statutory requirement of at least 21 days notice. Bryant answers yes, this notice fails because the statute requires at least 21 days, a full 21 days.
Do you know how many statutes or rules use this same language?
There are a number, Justice Heck. The chief one, of course, is the rule promulgated by this court, the summary judgment rule, Rule 166A. That's a rule that contains the language that indicates that the hearing shall be at least 21 days after the notice.
Actually, there are hundreds.
Yes.
Would the construction that you are urging apply to all of those cases?
Surely.
Would it make any difference that if the words at least were omitted?
It conceivably could make a difference, Justice Hatch.
So at least 21 days is different from 21 days?
Surely. And the reason for that is a common sense application. This is a proposition that even young people can understand. If a teenager asks a parent, "Dad, could I have some money for my high school graduation gown?" And the father says, "How much do you need?" And the son says, "At least $21. And Dad attempts to hand a $20 bill, you know the reaction of the teenager. "Dad, I said I need at least $21. 20 is not at least 21.
But if he said, "Dad, I need $21, and he handed him 20, he'd be satisfied.
No, Your Honor, he wouldn't.
Well, I thought you said the at least made a difference.
It can make a difference. There are statutes, there are situations where properly one day or the other on the end of a period can be included.
What's left of that? What's left of the Code Construction Act provision if this rule applies in the hundreds of contexts in which at least X number of days is used?
Justice Heck, the Code Construction Act that you're speaking of, that statute that the Court of Appeals applied, section 311.04,
yes.
Observe, please, that that is a within which statute. There are two different kinds of counting situations and two different kinds of counting periods. The first type of counting situation is where a rule or statute grants to a party a period of time within which to act, much like Texas Rule of Appellate Procedure 41 indicates with respect to the filing of a cost bond. That's not the foreclosure statute. It is the kind of accounting situation where an act or event cannot occur until after there's a passage of time. Now, it should be observed here that not only has the Court of Appeals applied a backward counting scheme that makes no sense at all, but it has misapplied it in the sense that the Code Construction Act is a within which kind of analysis. The Code Construction Act indicates in that section that we discussed that the first day shall be excluded and the last day shall be included.
Mr. Hobb, do you concede that in the foreclosure context, this language has been consistently interpreted to count the first day?
No.
You do not concede that?
What? That may be misleading. Let me respond in two ways. You're asking whether or not the cases represented by Hudson against Sadler,
yes,
and its progeny should be applied to this case.
Yes.
And there are two answers. First, this court can ignore it. Or second, it can overrule it because it's incorrect.
What if the industry, you know, the lawyers, the bankers, and everybody that deals with proposals relied on this construction? If we were to change it now, we would not call into question all the proposals that have taken place under this construction.
There are a number of different answers to that, Justice Gonzalez. Let me see if I can get through all of them. First, the four-year statute of limitations would eliminate a number of those foreclosures. Second, on April 1, a new statute went into effect in Texas that limits the foreclosures and recovery to 2 years. So there's a new statute of limitations that applies effective now. So this is, after all, not a change in a rule. This is a rule represented by a noted case. This court has never passed on it. The only opportunity this court had to pass on it was in Dr. Hausman's case. This court NRE'd that case because the El Paso court held that Dr. Hausman was not even a debtor entitled to notice. So the language that followed Hudson by rote is dictum. The same is true of the other two cases that have followed Hudson. But it should be observed, first of all, Justice Gonzalez, a case can be ignored because Hudson applied that rule to the old language of 3810. That article simply said that the notice shall be posted 3 weeks before sale. It did not have the at least language. In addition, Hudson had the defect of looking at a situation where a period of time had to pass before an event could occur. It applied a within which rule to that. Look at a good example, back to Rule 41. That teaches that an appellant attempting to appeal must file an appeal bond within 30 days of the signing of judgment. Combined with Rule 5, that instructs that that bond is filed in the 30 days counted by excluding the day the judgment is signed. That's 0 day. Then the first day begins the day after the judgment is signed. Now, Rule 5 indicates that the 30th day is to be included. But observe that the appellant attempting to perfect appeal gets the complete 30 days in which to act. Now, that's what's wrong with Hudson, Justice Gonzales. It failed to appreciate that what the foreclosure statute was dealing with was a situation where the passage of time had to occur before an event could take place. But it applied a within which method of counting. And then it improperly applied it. It indicated that it was proper to cut off one end or the other. That was the analysis in Hudson. It went through a discussion of the various notice statutes and said, after all, you can cut off this end under that statute, or you can cut off that end under this statute, and so it's proper to cut off one end or the other. And then it applied a within which rule. But it did so improperly by failing to observe that when a within which rule is applied, like Rule 41, the party gets the complete 30 days in which to act.
Counsel, do you find that the average practicing attorney in the state of Texas finds this rule confusing?
Yes and no is the answer, Justice Cook. That's a part of the answer to Justice Gonzales' question about how it will affect land titles. It won't really, as a matter of fact, because most careful lawyers have always excluded both ends. There are a few who are not so careful who have followed Hudson, but improperly so. It's a risky business to follow a no-writ case on which this court has never passed.
Would it be improper for this court, if it did change the rule, to follow the suggestion of the amicus and only do it prospectively? Because there have been no writ cases out there?
Two responses. I'm unaware that amicus has been filed. Amicus hasn't favored me with a copy of the brief, but I can
this morning.
We got it right yesterday.
I can understand why I don't have it. It's probably in Lubbock, but your question goes to whether it should be prospective or retroactive, and it's a continuation of the answer that has been begun here about 4 years, and now the 2-year statute of limitations limits this. But observe the kinds of cases to which this rule would apply, either prospectively or retroactively. It applies to wrongful foreclosures. But if the title is already in the hands of a BFP, then it's a suit for damage. And if the title is still in the hands of the mortgage company, it's just a fuss between the mortgagor and mortgagee. It never affects land titles. Or it applies to a deficiency case such as this. And in a deficiency case, it's a suit for damages and never affects land titles. So the complete answer is that there are very few cases in which land titles will ever be affected by this rule. Now, there are some cases in which damages may be imposed because of an improper notice. The only conclusion that can be reached in this case is one requiring the full 21 days. Otherwise, the at least language becomes meaningless. Both mortgagors and mortgagees' rights are damaged. The judgment should be reversed and rendered.
Can you explain why, once again slowly, why the Code Construction Act only applies to within which statutes? That is, statutes that require that you must do something within a certain day after a certain day, rather than, I gather this is a before. We could call this a before which statute.
Sure, surely. It is a statute that is directed to other statutes and rules which contain no counting rule. Now, it might be observed that the foreclosure statute contains its own inherent counting rule and it wouldn't need the Code Construction Act. But when the cases under the Code Construction Act are considered, they're really applied to within which situations. Now, it is true that the language of Section 311.014 does not literally contain the words within which, but it does talk about excluding the first day, including the last day, just like Rule 41 and almost ever within which rule or statute. For that reason, it makes good sense to say that that is a within which rule that should never apply to a situation where the time period must absolutely pass before the event such as foreclosure can occur. Otherwise, mortgagor's property will forever be at risk.
Do you have a name for this type of statute as opposed to within which?
Until after. It is a situation where an event or an act cannot occur until after the total passage of the days.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May I please the court? Mr. W. Gary Fowles will present argument for the defense.
May it please the court. The rule suggested by petitioner is contrary to every decision that has interpreted Article 3810 and its successor, 51.002. It is also contrary to the general weight of authority as to the method of counting days for any period, whether the counting is done prior to or after which.
Counsel?
Yes, sir.
I need some help here. The statute says notice must be posted with a slash there.
Mm-hmm.
Until 21 days before, put another slash there, sale. Can you cite me to another statute with that language where at least doesn't mean no less than?
Yes, Your Honor, I can. In the case of Fonseca, which was a Fifth Circuit case, I have the citation, 496 F. 2nd, 109. The Fifth Circuit dealt with the question of the election code requiring the filing of candidacy petitions not less than 20 days before the election. The appellants argued that the candidacies were not properly filed because they were filed on the 20th day before, much analogous to our situation of posting on the 21st day before. The court apparently was cited to the cases that are cited by the petitioner in this case. The court said that under the Code Construction Act, the period would be proper now, and certainly would be proper now, regardless of any prior or conflicting Texas authority under the Code Construction Act. So the language has been applied outside the context of foreclosures to the not less than blank days sort of situation.
Is there any justifiable reason for this at least then language, meaning something in one thing in some context and another in another context? In other words, if we affirm the judgment of the Court of Appeals, don't we have to say something about the Williams case?
Well,
summary judgments are counted.
Your Honor, I think the O'Connor decision is instructive at least in one regard, or perhaps two.
The O'Connor?
That's the O'Connor versus Towns case cited by the petitioner, which is the one Texas reports, the 1846 case.
Okay.
And it's heavily relied upon by the petitioner. O'Connor, when you read through the opinion, goes through a variety of laws existed at that time, many of which allowed counting one of the terminal dates. The court held there that because of the special particular considerations, that being that the defendant was only given 5 days to answer, that because this rule does not permit itself of ready construction, the court said, we will entertain the benefit of the doubt and give the extra day because of the size of the state at that time and the difficulties of answering. There's a lengthy annotation that's cited in several of the cases that we cite. That annotation notes that the O'Connor case is a bit of an aberration. In fact, it says that the only other authority like that is in Utah. And it notes that there is also conflicting Texas authority on the same question. And the court there considered that it was a special considerations given because of the length of time and also the date of the decision that influenced that. This court, as far as the Williams case and the summary judgment cases, can find that that perhaps includes a requirement for 21 days clear notice. That's not necessary for the decision of this court.
But I mean, really, the people of Texas in a situation where some statutes with language mean one thing and other statutes mean another, and a lawyer has to...
I would prefer not. I think this language is clear that the general rule is that you count 21 days excluding one of the terminal dates, and that is the general weight of the authority. That would be my preference, but I don't think that is essential to the court's opinion.
Do you think your interpretation makes common sense?
Yes, Your Honor, I do.
In light of the fact that it says at least, if you took five high school students and told them they had at least 5 days off for spring break, do you think they would feel that meant 4.5? 4.25, or that they had 5 full days off for spring break?
Well, I'm not sure about that, Your Honor, but if you told them that they will get a break 5 days from now, I know which day they'd start taking off.
Yeah.
It would be the 5th day from now. Or if they said, you were supposed to have this in 5 days ago, it would be counting backwards to that. The not less than means that it can be more equal to or more than. It doesn't mean that it has to be more than 21 days.
Do you think that especially young lawyers have agonized over the interpretation of what this means for decades?
Well, I can speak for one young lawyer who might have agonized over it a little bit in the last couple of days. I think it's important that if a lawyer was approached with this question and said, which day do we have to post? You go to Bagot. Bagot says unequivocally, you count the day of posting. It's the authority on foreclosures. It's what lenders have relied on. It's what the banks have relied on. It's what real estate purchasers have relied on, title associations. That lawyer would also see 4 cases, and now 5, uniformly applying this statute in this context. That lawyer would also see the Code Construction Act. And he or she would find that the same sort of language had been interpreted by the Fifth Circuit in a uniform manner after the passage of the Code Construction Act. Given that, I think a lawyer would feel very secure in saying, yeah, we can moot all questions and post on Monday, and that might be better. It's better not to ever have an issue come up. But with that weight of authority, I don't think a lawyer would have lost sleep over that issue. With that many authorities pointing to him or her that the 21st day was proper.
Is there any legislative history associated with the change that the legislature made in 1975 that is helpful in understanding whether that change from 3 weeks to 21 days has any significance?
Yes, Your Honor, I think it is. There's no particular legislative history, but that statute was not aimed at increasing the number of days. I think the petitioner has a very tough burden to come in and say that there's significance in changing 3 weeks to 21 days.
Well, let me be more limited first.
Okay.
Do you have any legislative history that tells us whether it had, what the purpose was behind changing 3 weeks to at least 21 days?
The thing that I do have is the statute that prior to that case, there had been a question raised as to whether or not due process had been accorded debtors by not receiving the notice. And this statute provided that the notice must also be sent to the debtor at that time. That was the purpose of the statute. It was not to change it. And it's interesting that the language in the statute at that time, which was 21 days preceding the date of sale, was very similar to what was enacted into the statute, which was 21 days prior to the day of sale. You may have those backwards. I think the decision was 21 days prior to the day of sale. It's preceding the day of sale. Very similar language in what is in Hudson and what goes into the statute 2 years later. We also have that the statute was amended in 75, in 83, in 1987, and in 1991. And this court has noted that when a statute is continually reenacted in the light of precedent, it must be given that that interpretation which has been settled upon by the courts. And that was the Cunningham case at 406 Southwest 2nd, 46.
This court has never addressed the question.
Not this question directly, Your Honor. But it's been relied upon by lenders, bankers, real estate purchasers, even I dare say borrowers, in interpreting that statute by the leading treatise authorities and by a line of cases that has been developed. I want to speak very briefly with regard to the relief that is sought by the petitioner in this case. He was just asking that this case be reversed and rendered. No matter what decision is reached by this court, I do not feel that a reverse and rendering would be at all proper in this case. In the court below, the petitioner pleaded for damages for wrongful foreclosure. Contrary to the authority cited by the petitioner, this court in Tarrant Savings Association versus Lucky Homes, which is at 390 Southwest 2nd, 473, held that it was erroneous to assume that a prerequisite to the recovery of a deficiency judgment is establishment of a default by a valid foreclosure. Instead, the remedy is for damages for the wrongful foreclosure or for rescission of the foreclosure. The petitioner below did not request for rescission of the foreclosure and sued for damages for the wrongful foreclosure. In the measure of damages, as this court said in Farrell versus Hunt, is the amount of damages offset against the indebtedness. As it turned out in this particular case, the jury found that the offset that had already been accorded by the bank was the same as the fair market value of the property. And Your Honors, if that point was not developed by prior counsel in the briefing in this case, and I'd be happy if the court so desires to submit supplemental briefing on that particular question, if the court so desires.
If you feel it would be helpful, you can submit it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Do so within 10 days.
I'll be within 10 days. Can I get a complete 10 days?
Let me give you a day.
I'll do it on the no later than the 27th. Your Honor, let me reiterate what has been set forth in the amicus briefs, which have been only recently filed in this court. This rule has been relied upon by parties in conducting foreclosures. It is supported by the overwhelming weight of the authority, both here in Texas and as far as the general rules for counting days now contained in the Code Construction Act. It has been relied upon parties. It is consistent with the general rules. We ask that the rule for counting days on foreclosures be reaffirmed and that this court affirm the judgment of the Court of Appeals. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, I've got one question.
Yes, sir.
You said you would file your brief at least by the 27th. Which day were you excluding for counting purposes?
One of the two terminal dates. I as the, one of the amicus points out, it is, it really doesn't matter whether you count frontwards or backwards. You count frontwards, you exclude the first day, and count backwards. You still wind up at the same place.
It does if there's a holiday.
It does if there's a holiday. And if for any reason Tuesday, November the 10th here, had been Veterans Day, the proper thing would have been to file on November 9th. You couldn't have gotten it into the courthouse otherwise. You couldn't have put it in the mail. The mails don't run on Veterans Day.
You indicated that all of the TRIAS writers supported your point of view. Are those cited in the amicus briefs, or where are they?
Yes, they are in the amicus brief. The Bagot is the one I'm relying upon, Your Honor.
Which one?
Bagot on foreclosures.
And which amicus brief is that in?
That would be, I believe, the Texas Bankers Association amicus brief. And I'll be happy to also provide those citations in supplemental briefing.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
It pleases the court. This is still a matter of 21 days, at least 21 days in given its meaning. The argument has been made that Bagot and other authorities indicate that there's settled authority in this state. Look carefully at Bagot and these other text writers that say the authority is settled. It relies first on Hudson. But what did Hudson say? Hudson said, we can find no authority, meaning that Hudson never found this court's opinion in O'Connor against Towns, meaning that Hudson never found any of the at least cases or not less than cases.
Do you admit that the O'Connor rule is a minority rule around the nation?
No. It is the majority rule.
Where can we go to find that? To find that it's the majority. Right?
This is said empirically from looking at a number of cases in research. I have no authority that tells you that it's minority or majority.
Are you familiar with the ALR?
Yes.
Referred to?
But the point I want to make here is that when Hudson was announced in 1973, the beginning of this so-called settled authority, it recognized there was no authority. And there was. It recognized that it had to fashion a rule by use of the within which rule that shouldn't apply to this kind of a situation. And then it misapplied it by cutting off one of the terminal days when the correct application of the within which rule gives the full 30 days, like Rule 41, in which to act. So the authority again failed to recognize what authority there was, said there was none, and misapplied the rule it purported to apply. That's how things existed from 1973 until 1979. One, no writ case on which Bagot and these other so-called authorities and all these lawyers have relied all these years. Then came Houseman, and regrettably, as counsel for Dr. Houseman, I made this argument to the El Paso court, and it was rejected because Houseman was not a debtor entitled to any notice in this court in RE. So then followed the string of cases after that.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first clause, and the court will take a brief recess.